Welcome to the Sleep Like a Boss podcast. If you're struggling with sleep and have tried everything that Google, your friends, or Facebook groups have recommended and you're still struggling, stop looking for that one thing to fix your sleep. The human body is complex and one single supplement or lifestyle fix is likely not going to be the solution. Here on the Sleep Like a Boss podcast, we dig into all aspects of sleep for you and unravel the complexity. My name is Annika Carroll. I'm the new CEO of Sleep Like a Boss, and me and my team are here to end the epidemic of sleep deprivation. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Sleep Like a Boss podcast. I'm Annika Carroll, your host, and I am super excited about today's guest. I have Dr. Deb Matthew on the show. She is known as the Happy Hormones Doctor. She's been featured in North America, internationally. She really knows why women struggle with sleep, especially in their 40s. And that's what we're going to talk about today, because I have so many clients and I see so much feedback from you guys that this is really the time where sleep all of a sudden goes out the window. We have no clue what's going on. And we're going to dive into that today and learn what's going on and what we can do about it. Deb, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. Tell us maybe a little bit about, because your story is interesting. You are a medical doctor. You had your own struggles with our lovely hormones and then have shifted your approach to how you help women look at medicine and look at practices with your patients. And maybe tell us a little bit about what happened there.
Sure. Well, I used to be exhausted all the time. And I needed way more sleep than everybody else. So at first, not sleeping wasn't my problem. It was I had to have enough sleep. And I was cold all the time. And eventually I got diagnosed with hypothyroidism, which is one of the things that I want to talk about today. But it took me 10 years before I finally got the diagnosis. And then I had symptoms for 10 more years. And I didn't know better, because what we're taught about thyroid is that if your lab tests are normal, once they put you on the thyroid pill, then you're normal. It can't be your thyroid anymore. But when I was in my late 30s, I started having more mood symptoms. Like, I was shrieking at my kids over every little thing. And then I felt so guilty, because that's not the kind of mom that I wanted to be, always screaming. And I was waking up in the middle of the night with panic attacks for no reason. Like, there was nothing bad happening that would explain this. But I would wake up in the middle of the night and my heart was racing and it was sort of hard to breathe. And my husband didn't know what to do with me, because one minute I was happy and the next minute I was, you know, flipping out over something silly. And then 2 days later, I'd look back and think, what was that about? You know, it wasn't a big deal, but my emotions were all over the place. And I didn't understand what was happening. There was nothing in my medical training that helped me understand what was going on. And so it went on for a long time, because it was really confusing. And what helped me, what changed everything, is I read a book about hormones that was written by Suzanne Summers. You remember Suzanne Summers? She was on a TV show called Three's Company in the 70s. And, you know, as medical practitioners, we don't want to get our medical information from celebrities. Like, there's, you know, but I didn't know what else to do. And so I read the book, and she had all these stories about women who were just like me and how much better they felt once they got their hormones in balance. Mm-hmm. And it explained so much about what was going on. And it helped me to find the right places to go to get my hormones in balance. And I got my energy back. My kids got their mom back. My husband got his wife back. I got my life back. But then I couldn't go back to just writing prescriptions all day, every day, because it just didn't feel right anymore. And so I completely retired from my old practice. And so since 2007, I've been helping women get their hormones back in balance so that they can get really well. They can come off a lot of those prescription medicines and love the way they feel.
Oh, that is wonderful. And I think exactly what you're describing, the mood issues, right? The mood swings, then those panic attacks. Sometimes it's the anxiety, it's depression. And then we get put on, how many clients do I see who are like, you're my last resort before I go on an antidepressant because my doctor is saying that's what I need.
Yeah.
If you don't want that, like, there is help, right? You're the best example. So what do you think is it that causes these?
Yeah.
The mood issues and the sleep issues and all that stuff.
Okay. And sleep is a really, really prominent issue for women, especially as we get in our late 30s and into our 40s. So what happens as we go through our life is our hormones change. So in puberty, we know our hormones are way changing, but perimenopause is like puberty in reverse. It's the period of time before menopause.
Mm-hmm.
And menopause is technically defined as when you've gone 12 months without a period. But the time leading up to menopause, it can go on for 5, 10, 15 years where your hormones are shifting. It's like puberty in reverse. And one of the primary hormones that is starting to change is progesterone. So estrogen and progesterone are the two ones that go up and down over our menstrual cycle. And estrogen drops when we go through menopause, but it can actually get a little higher before it finally drops. But the one that I want to start by talking about is progesterone. It is progestational. So it's a hormone that helps sustain a pregnancy. And as it's starting to drop, as we're in our late 30s and in our 40s, that is one of the factors for why fertility gets a little difficult as we get older. But really important for our conversation today, progesterone is a calming hormone. It helps us feel chilled out and relaxed and calm. Whereas if progesterone is declining, we can feel more anxious and irritable and impatient and critical, and little things make us feel like this. So sometimes you can see, I don't know, your kids are making a mess with all their boots in the hallway, or your spouse has just left his dirty socks on the floor right beside the laundry hamper, and you just want to rip your hair out.
Yes.
And in your brain, you know that whatever they've done, it's not really like the biggest, you know, crisis in the whole world, but you can't help feeling that way. Sometimes you can't help letting those words fly that you probably should have zipped your lips. And I have a completely unscientific theory that, you know how we talk about all these Karens out there that are misbehaving and saying stupid things. And if you look at it, they're all kind of midlife women doing this. And I think they all need their hormones checked because they're probably a little low in the progesterone that would have just given them the tolerance to just let it be whatever it is that they're upset about. So progesterone is really important to keep us calm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important for sleep. It's not so much that it helps us to fall asleep at bedtime. It's more that once you do fall asleep, it helps you get into that nice, deep, restorative sleep so that when you wake up in the morning, you feel refreshed. And as progesterone is going down, a lot of times what women will notice is they wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, like we just lie there and our brain is turned on and we can't fall back asleep. And so our sleep is interrupted. And if you don't get that nice, deep, restorative sleep, if you're constantly interrupted, it's not good for our health. We all know that when children don't get a good night's sleep, they're more cranky the next day. So no wonder we're, you know, cranky. So it's just so important for quality of sleep. Another thing that is associated with decline in progesterone is night sweats.
Mm-hmm.
So women will notice that they're hot, they're cold, their blankets off, blankets on. Sometimes they literally sweat so that now they have to change their pajamas, or sometimes women will put a towel down because the sheets are wet, terribly disrupting for sleep. And there is a pattern. So like the question that we're going to get to is, how would you know if this mm-hmm. is because of perimenopause?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a pattern that we commonly see, which is that it gets worse before your period and it gets better after your period. So if you're anxious every single day, or if you're irritable every single day, maybe there's something else that's contributing. Maybe it's not your hormones. But if you have a very clear pattern that the week or so before your period, you're kind of not the nicest person around. You know, your family kind of walks on eggshells. You're not sleeping. You know, your energy is down. You're just not quite the same. And then all of a sudden, once your period is over, now you have a good week and you're chopping up your broccoli and you're going to the gym and you're cleaning out the closets. If there's that big difference, it is your hormones. You know, if you can't stand your husband 1 week out of the month, it's not him.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think that's such an important one that really start for women who wonder, actually start tracking that, right? Like start noting it that, or was this 1 month because it was extremely stressful because things happened and this might have also been something, or is this something like 2-3 months in a row I'm seeing?
Yeah.
And yes, there is a pattern then. And it could be like, because we were talking about like 40-ish, it could be earlier.
It right? can be in your 30s. For me, I was only in my 30s.
Could be that some women in their early 40s are still good on progesterone, that there is enough hormone stored there, or that you're already on the declining end of the spectrum, which I think it are most of us, right? I think like the most of us, it starts declining in the mid 30s and we don't really notice yet. And then life hits us and stress comes in. And
another thing that I find is there are certain symptoms that we are aware of that are hormonal. Like if you have breast tenderness before your period, we kind of, most of us know, like there's a connection there. But a lot of women don't notice that the nights of bad sleep get worse before their period and then get better. All they know is sometimes I sleep bad and sometimes I sleep better. And they haven't made that connection. So at least being aware, you know, you can start to put the patterns together in order to be able to say, oh yeah, it really does get work that worse, you know, those few days before my period.
Well, we're going to talk about, I'll leave how we're going to fix that for a minute.
Yeah.
But so progesterone, okay, so it makes us calm, helps us get into that deep sleep. That way we're in a better mood. So what's the number?
Well, can I just give you a couple more symptoms of progesterone? And then let's move, because I got more. So besides the anxiety and the sleep, and it's really important to say that the way that progesterone works on our brain is that it binds to what's called GABA receptors. But that's the same way that anxiety medicines work and sleeping pills work. So that's why as doctors, if you're not sleeping or you're anxious, we write you those prescriptions, because that's what we're trained to do at medical school. We're trained to write prescriptions. But if the problem is low progesterone, they're only going to be, you know, they're only partway going to fix the problem. If we could just help you to have more progesterone, maybe you wouldn't need those pills. But other symptoms can be changes in your menstrual cycle. So if you're not making as much progesterone, your periods can get heavier. You can have more PMS, the breast tenderness, fluid retention, bloating, et cetera, can all be worse than it used to be. Your PMS symptoms can last longer. So maybe when you were 20, it was like a day or two, but now it can start to be 3 days, 5 days, 7 days, 14 days. Like some women have one good week out of the whole month and the rest of the time they just feel yucky. So there's a lot of these different kinds of symptoms that we piece together in order to sort of say, this really could be a progesterone issue or a hormone issue. But progesterone is not the only one. Another one that changes in our 40s is testosterone. And we think about testosterone for men, right? But women have testosterone too. And women are really surprised to learn we have 10 times more testosterone than we have estrogen. It's just that men have 10 times more testosterone than women do. But testosterone is a motivating hormone. So it gives us our get up and go and the zip in our step and get things accomplished. And so if it starts to drop, just because our ovaries are changing as we're tippy-toeing towards menopause, we just tend to feel more flat, kind of blah. You know, we'll put one foot in front of the other, make our way through the day, whatever has to happen. You know, you'll get the food on the table for your family. You'll get that report turned in for your job. But if it doesn't have to be today, a lot of times we just kind of procrastinate, we push it to the side because we're just not really feeling it. And a lot of women resonate with that, the just the blah, kind of lost the zest for life. But if you walk into your doctor's office and say, oh, I just feel blah, I don't feel like doing things, I don't have any motivation, either they're going to say they got nothing for you, or they're going to write you a prescription for an antidepressant, because that's the only tool that we were taught at medical school. Testosterone, though, really can help with sleep. It can help with energy. It can help with mood. It plays a really big role in all of these things, just like progesterone does. And so, again, helping to balance the testosterone can play a really big role in the quality of sleep for women.
And I think that is also partially testosterone. Correct me if I'm wrong. I see a lot of women starting to struggle with memory issues. And they get concerned about dementia, Alzheimer's, because it might be running in the family, or it is a very prevalent disease. And that is not often not necessarily a precursor that if at 42 you're starting to have memory lapses, that you're on track for Alzheimer's disease, right?
It's such a common complaint. In fact, I often say, you know, women know that when we go through this menopausal process, that hot flashes are one of the symptoms, right? Everybody sort of knows about hot flashes. So if you're having hot flashes, you kind of know what it is. But if hot flashes was the only thing that we had to put up with, you know, they're annoying. Nobody wants to have them, but like we'd get through it. But the part that is the most problematic, in my opinion, for women is the fact that our brain starts to fail us. So whether it's we're not sleeping or we don't have energy or our mood is off or we just can't think straight. And so sometimes it's you can't remember why you walked in the room, where you left your car keys, what's that person's name. Or sometimes it's just that you kind of lose your train of thought. Like some women will come in and say, I think I've got ADD, but that's something that you would have had your whole life. So if you were fine for the last four decades, and now all of a sudden you're super distractible and you can't find anything and you got to have sticky notes and lists, it's not ADD, but it could be your hormones changing. Mm-hmm. Women will say that they can't compute in their head. Like they have this feeling of brain fog. Mm-hmm. And again, it's almost certainly not early Alzheimer's, although we can't help worry about that.
No.
Especially like you said, if somebody has a family history, that's the first place our brain is going to go. But very commonly it's because of hormones. Hormones are so important for nurturing your brain and keeping all those connections between all of our brain cells, and things change and it's scary.
Yeah. Okay. So progesterone, testosterone.
Yeah. Okay. Another really important one is cortisol.
My favorite.
Cortisol is our stress hormone. So, I mean, you don't need to go to medical school to know that when you're really stressed out, you're probably not sleeping that well. And so when you have a whole bunch of stuff going on in your life that is either keeping you super busy or it is something that's kind of, you know, scary, or you know, you're going through a divorce or somebody's sick in the family or you're worried about your job. I mean, we all feel stressed. None of us sleep well when those things are going on. And part of the reason is that our body produces more cortisol to help us cope with stress. And cortisol, it stimulates our sympathetic nervous system. That's our fight or flight response. And so it makes us more alert. What's supposed to happen is we're supposed to have a circadian rhythm. So when we first wake up in the morning, what's supposed to happen is we're supposed to get this spurt of cortisol, and cortisol is like long acting adrenaline. So it's like we get this little adrenaline spurt so that we open up our eyes and we leap from our bed ready to start our day. And then cortisol is gradually supposed to go down over the day so that it's nice and low at night and we're calm and relaxed and we fall asleep and we sleep soundly through the night. And then in the morning, it goes up to wake us up and away we go. That's what's supposed to happen. What happens for a lot of people is it gets flipped around backwards. Our circadian rhythm is out of whack. And so sometimes it doesn't go up in the morning. It's too low in the morning. And now you're trying to wake up, but you're pressing snooze a couple of times. Like it's really hard to drag yourself out of bed. And even if you remove your body physically from your bed, your brain isn't all the way woken up sometimes. And a lot of people have coffee in the morning because caffeine gives us a little boost in cortisol. And now our brain can wake up and function like a human being. So it takes a little bit to get us going in the morning, and then we're okay for a while. And then we get this crash and burn in the afternoon, you know, 2-3 in the afternoon, we need another cup of coffee. We need sugar. We need a nap. We need something to get us through till dinner. But then if you stay up late enough, a lot of people will get a second wind. And now their cortisol goes up too high at, you know, 10 o'clock at night. Now some people are getting their best work of the day done. They're tidying up and doing things for work, but their brain is not ready to go to sleep. So then they lie down in bed and they're wide awake and they're thinking about all the things that they don't need to think about. And then in the middle of the night, whether cortisol spikes high or drops low, either one of those can wake you up. And you can just imagine if you get a little cortisol spike in the middle of the night, it's like a little adrenaline rush. And there you are, your eyes are wide awake, you're staring at the ceiling, your brain is going, thinking about. And when you feel this little adrenaline rush, it feels the same as danger. You know, your heart speeds up a little bit, your breathing speeds up a little bit. You feel like there's some kind of danger. There's something that you should be worried about. And your brain will start to search, what should I worry about? You know, where's the danger coming from? And you can always find something to worry about. So anxiety is sort of a two-way thing. Sometimes there's real things that you would be worried about that can trigger these feelings. And sometimes you can physiologically be having these feelings because of your chemistry and your hormones, and that will trigger you to think about the things that you're going to worry about. So it's a two-way street. And even if your stress levels come down, the cortisol does not always automatically fix itself. So of course, we're going to talk about some of the things you can do to make this better, but it can be really confusing because if somebody went through a really stressful time in their life, whatever it was, a divorce, you know, illness in the family, whatever, and now that's kind of moved on and things are in an okay place, you would assume that everything should be back to normal with your cortisol. And sometimes it doesn't automatically go back to normal. And the other thing is, this can happen at any age. This can happen with children. This can happen with young adults. This is not specifically tied to menopause. It is more common in people who do have a history of childhood trauma of whatever ilk. It can make this worse because your whole stress system kind of changed because of whatever you had to go through as a child. And when we start to go through perimenopause and our progesterone levels start to decline, progesterone can be used by your body to make cortisol. And so when your progesterone changes, it impacts cortisol. And the flip side is true, that if your body is either making too much cortisol or not enough cortisol, or just your circadian pattern is off, that shuts down progesterone. And so when you have more stress in your life and when cortisol is out of whack, it creates more perimenopausal and menopausal symptoms. So they all kind of tie together.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really beautifully explained. And I see that a lot with clients. And like you're saying, all ages, that sometimes the body just gets tipped so out of whack with cortisol that it's just really has a hard time coming back if the stress was either too intense or it has been gone on for too long, right? That we really need to relearn, retrain our nervous system, and then give the body a little support to be able to do that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other players in the game?
Yeah. If we're specifically talking about hormones, another one is thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
So when women are hypothyroid, meaning an underfunctioning thyroid, a really common symptom is that they need more sleep than anybody else. So often women will come in and say, I need at least 10 hours of sleep just to function. So commonly, low thyroid comes along with sleeping a lot. But it is really not uncommon to have the opposite, which is that you can't sleep. I see that a lot in women who are, they already know, like me, they already know they're hypothyroid. They're already taking their thyroid pill, but it's not really working well for them and they're still not sleeping well. And sometimes if we can do a better job managing the thyroid, it goes a long way to helping them sleep. And one of the reasons why your thyroid might not be working well, or if you are hypothyroid, you are already on thyroid replacement, but you're still having symptoms, one of the causes for that could be a problem with cortisol, because cortisol gets in the way of how thyroid functions. And so you keep going back to your doctor to say, like, but I still have these symptoms, my thyroid can't be right. And they keep checking and telling you everything is normal, which is super frustrating. But maybe it's not just your thyroid's fault. Maybe it's some of these other things going on. Even if your estrogen is still okay, because you haven't quite hit menopause yet, but your progesterone has gone down, that pattern also interferes with the thyroid hormone function. So your thyroid gland might be fine, but if you have a cortisol problem, the estrogen, progesterone imbalance, too much inflammation in your body, not enough of certain vitamins and minerals, all of those get in the way of how you can use the thyroid hormone that's in your body. So you have all the symptoms of low thyroid, but your doctor tells you everything is normal.
Yes. And it is totally frustrating, right? It's like you're trying to dig into it and you're trying to figure out what's going wrong. And apparently you're fine. You're perfect health according to the blood work that came back.
Yeah. Isn't that frustrating?
It is. So we've talked about a few symptoms. We've talked about progesterone. We've talked about testosterone. So testosterone is like it mood, memory, motivation, those kinds of things. What about cortisol? Are there a few symptoms you said, yeah, not being able to fall asleep, like getting that second wind at night?
So cortisol can cause anxiety. So we have to be a little bit careful because sometimes people talk about high cortisol and people talk about low cortisol, but you can have both, you mm-hmm. at the wrong time of the day. So it's that circadian pattern that's really important. But so typically what I say is when cortisol is out of whack, right? Because it'd be high, low, all over the map. When it's just not doing the right thing, food cravings, Especially sometimes it's sugar cravings, but sometimes it's actually salt cravings. You can have it can impact blood pressure. So you can have high blood pressure if it's too high. You can have low blood pressure if it's too low. So like if you stand up too quickly, you can get lightheaded, for example. It can make it really difficult to cope with stress if cortisol is not right. So a lot of women in their 40s will come in and say, like, everything is just stressing me out. Like, it's so hard to cope with things. So whereas in the past, I just ran with it and handled things. Now it's just like overwhelming. Sometimes you just want to crawl back into bed and pull the covers over your head and make it go away because it just feels like too much to deal with things. Or emotional stressors, like maybe getting into an argument with somebody, makes you feel physically tired, like you want to go lie down. It can be harder to, like, after you exercise, we should feel energized after we exercise, but exercise is a stress. And so cortisol goes up when we exercise to help us deal with the stress of exercise. That's a good thing. But if your cortisol can't handle it, then after you exercise, first of all, it's hard to push yourself to exercise, to have the energy, motivation, the strength, the stamina. But after you exercise, if you kind of force it, a lot of times people will go home and they'll just have to recover. Like they'll just need to have a nap. And it's especially prominent in people who have chronic fatigue syndrome, where sometimes if they use up too much of their energy, even if it's not exercising, even if it's going to the grocery store, sometimes it can take a day or two just to recover, because their system just doesn't have it in them to cope with those normal activities for the rest of us, but for them, it's a big stress. So there's a lot of different symptoms that go along with a lot of these different hormones. And one of the challenges for women is that there's lots of different things that could cause these, right? There's lots of things that can cause sleep problems. There's lots of things that can cause anxiety. And so how do you know if it's your hormones is a really important question for us to ask.
So how do we know?
So the first thing that I would say is you want to look at the patterns. So you want to know if you're having menstrual cycles, is it fluctuating with your menstrual cycle? And if there's a clear fluctuation, then clearly it's because of your hormones. Sometimes it's not so clear. And for a lot of us, our periods become irregular. So then it's just really hard to even know. And so one way that you can tell is by doing the things that can help to get your hormones back in balance. So we'll talk about what those things might be. And then at the end of it all, what you can do is you can get your hormone levels tested. And it sounds simple, right? Oh, just get your hormone levels tested. But it's actually hard to find somebody who will test your hormones for you. And the reason that it's hard is because that's not what we're trained to do in medical school. That we just stick you on birth control pills and call it a day. And your hormones fluctuate over your menstrual cycle. So when you're on your period, estrogen and progesterone are low. And then the week after your period, progesterone is still low, but estrogen goes up a little bit. And then mid-cycle, when you ovulate, estrogen goes sky high. And then the last 2 weeks between ovulation and when you have your period again, both estrogen and progesterone are high, but the progesterone is the highest one of all. So if you're at your doctor's office on some random Tuesday and they were to draw blood to test your hormone levels, wherever you are in your cycle is going to be a completely different answer than wherever you would be the next Tuesday. And therefore, doctors just say, well, we can't measure your hormones. But your blood sugar changes all day long, too, depending on what you've eaten. And we check your blood sugar. We just tell you to go fasting. We just give you some instructions so that we can interpret it. Or sometimes we test it after a meal to see how high it goes when you've eaten. So it is possible to measure your hormones, but it's not so simple. And the most important time, if what we're looking for is this sort of perimenopausal sleep issue, is that time when you're having the symptoms. So about a week before your period is due is the time when we would want you to have your hormones done, not when you're on your period, not when you're ovulating, because we're going to get very different answers.
And this refers to women who are not on the pill, correctly?
Yeah, if
That
you're on the
because it's
pill,
wrong. Yeah.
we can't measure your hormone levels because your hormones get turned off. Birth control pills don't contain hormones. They contain man-made synthetic chemicals that are made to mimic your hormones, but the way that they work is they turn off estrogen and progesterone so that you don't ovulate. So there's no blood test for the chemicals that are in the birth control pill. You can go get your hormone levels tested. They're just going to come back really low, but that's because that's what the birth control pill does. It's not helpful.
And that's, I think, what you often hear Women say, I went to my doctor, they said, oh, you're not 50 or 51 yet, but you're on the pill. We're just going to kind of transition you over by the time you hit 50 or 51. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming you're going to be menopausal, but before that, we're not really doing anything else.
Yeah. And you know, birth control pills are not the same thing as hormones. And when you're 19 and you need birth control, okay, well, that's one thing. But if you're using it, I mean, if you really need it for birth control, there's other ways that you can do birth control. But if you really need it, okay, fine. But if you're using birth control to manage your periods or to manage acne or, you know, for some other reason, there are other ways. And birth control pills, in my opinion, are not the best. Specifically, one of the reasons is that they increase the risk for a blood clot. So when you're 19, your risk of a blood clot is so low. But if you're 49, you know, you don't want to have a stroke. Another thing is birth control pills shut down testosterone. So now you become low in testosterone. So you don't sleep, you don't have motivation, you don't feel like doing things, you start to lose muscle mass, it can impact your bones, and it impacts everything to do with sex, whether you think about it in the first place, care about it, become aroused, all of that goes down.
Yeah. And often I hear women say, yeah, but I'm on, like, on a progestin pill, and my doctor says there's progestin in the pill, so that's good because your progesterone is declining. So you're on progestin, so you're fine.
Yeah. So progestin is not progesterone. It's a synthetic man-made drug, and it mimics progesterone, but it was only studied to see what it does to your uterine lining. So, you know, to affect mm-hmm. pregnancy. But progesterone has impacts everywhere in your body, not just on your uterus. And the part of your body that has the most progesterone receptors is your brain. Mm-hmm. And so another time that this is, I think, really important to talk about is, what about women who have had a partial hysterectomy? So their uterus is removed, but they still have their ovaries. Mm-hmm. So now who knows what's really going on with your hormones, because you don't exactly have a period to tell you where you are in your cycle. But you're still cycling because your ovaries are still there. Or women who've had a complete hysterectomy too, they don't have anything, ovaries left. When you do not have a uterus, doctors don't give you progesterone or a progestin because they're only thinking about what it does on your uterine lining. Mm-hmm. But doctors like me, who are really about hormone balance, we give progesterone to all of our patients who need it, if they have a brain, whether or not they have a uterus, because it's just so important. So, and it's such a big reason why women don't sleep.
Yes, absolutely. So we've talked about testing. We've started talking about progesterone. So what are things that you, when you have patients, women in their 40s and they struggle with sleep, or in their 50s, yeah. what would you okay. suggest?
So if we want to try to get your hormones in balance, the first thing that we want you to do is we want you to eat a healthy diet. And I know it's so hard these days, right? You get nutritional whiplash because one day you hear some really smart person say you should be vegan and the next day you should be paleo. But for your hormones, we want you to eat whole foods, not the packaged foods with all the ingredients. We want healthy fats, not a low-fat diet. All these hormones that we're talking about are made out of cholesterol, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, cortisol. So cholesterol is not all bad. You don't have to be afraid of eggs, but we want the healthy fats. So olive oil, avocados, nuts, those are good healthy oils. We want you to get enough protein in your diet. And for proteins, I don't know what your take on this. I don't tell people that they need to be vegetarian, but we want you to buy the healthiest forms of animal proteins that you can. So wild caught fish and grass fed beef and things like that. So we want a healthy diet. Giving your body the nutrients that it needs to feel better is so important. And when women come to see us, you know, they come in, we take a history, and then we send them off to go get the labs done to measure mm-hmm. their hormones. While we are waiting for the results, we get them to start making improvements in their diet. And so often they'll come back and say, oh yeah, my hot flashes have already stopped and I'm sleeping so much better. It makes a big difference. And another huge dietary piece of advice is ditch the sugar. Mm-hmm. When you have sugar, you're going to have more night sweats. You're not going to sleep as well. Sugar creates inflammation. Inflammation throws your hormones out of whack. Don't underestimate it. If you have sugar cravings, generally speaking, if you can go for at least a week without the sugar cravings will go away. But sugar is a huge problem for hormone symptoms. So we want you to eat healthy. we want you to move your body. So you don't have to run a marathon. You don't have to join a boot camp, but going for a walk, stretching, move your body, because that's really important for helping balance, especially cortisol. And since cortisol regulates all the other hormones, you know, it just lets the other hormones do better. And we all know that if we're eating well and we're being physically active, we feel better. The challenge is when you don't feel good, it's hard to get yourself to do the right things. We want you to sleep well. So if only you could, right? That's half the challenge, but at least trying to put yourself to bed at a decent time. All the sleep hygiene things, I'm sure you talk about these things all the time about the lights and et cetera. So good sleep hygiene. And then stress management. So you can't eliminate stress in your life, if only we could. There are good stresses that you wouldn't want to eliminate. But what we can all do is we can try to have some balance. And part of there are some things that are big endeavors, like meditation and mindfulness and yoga. Those are wonderful. You should do them. They're great medicine. But even smaller things to bite off, if you're not doing those things, write in a gratitude journal. Because when we are feeling grateful, we can't feel grateful and anxious, upset, sad, et cetera, at the same time. So writing in a gratitude journal, or at least thinking about three things that you're grateful for, is so important. And you can always find something, right? You're grateful it's Friday. You're grateful that the sun is out today. Even when life is hard, we can always find something to feel grateful for. And if you can catch yourself thinking negative thoughts and stop yourself and think about something positive, it changes all of your chemistry. When we are worried, when we're frightened, when we're like thinking of the worst case scenario in our brain, our brain doesn't know the difference between we're imagining it and it's really happening. So the more you're ruminating over that conversation you had, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe she said that about me, or whatever it is, you're just taking a bad situation and you're making it a lot worse. If you can let it go, if you can be optimistic, if you can be the glass half full person, and you can take that same bad situation and you can lessen the negative impacts of the stress on your body. So again, if I could package that into a pill, I mean, I would, but it's just such powerful medicine. And the tricky part, it's easy to say it, right? Just think happy thoughts. What's hard is catching yourself when you're in that loop of thinking the negative thoughts and busting yourself out of it. But one of the things that can be helpful is if you physically hold your hand up, like you're saying, stop, and say out loud, stop. That can help to break the thought patterns to make it easier for you to think about something better. So managing stress in a healthy way, having balance to help balance out the stress, is actually a really critical thing if we're trying to help you balance your hormones so you can sleep.
Right. And I think it is, like you were describing earlier, in our 30s and our 20s, we did so much, right? The to-do list was just like ticked off and we juggled a bajillion balls. It does become harder. And if we do not adjust there, I think with what you were saying, how to manage stress, how to maybe set boundaries with people, how to ask for help sometimes. It's just, yeah, the ego might still be like, I've ticked all the boxes on the to-do list, but you're physically not getting to the state of feeling better.
Yeah.
So what, we're managing our diet, we're managing our stress. What about supplementation of any kind?
Okay. Some of the basic hormone or basic supplements that are good for hormone health is to just take a good quality multivitamin, because that's going to give you some of the vitamins and minerals that you need. A fish oil supplement can be helpful because it's very anti-inflammatory. And inflammation knocks your hormones out of whack, right? Sugar drives the inflammation. Inflammation drives your hormones out of whack. And fish oil is very anti-inflammatory. Vitamin D really is a hormone, even though we call it a vitamin. Most people are deficient in vitamin D. So you can get your level tested so that you can know for sure. You can take a vitamin D supplement and go back and get your level tested again to see if you're on the right dose to put you in the optimal range. We want you to be sort of in the middle of the range, not way down, barely at the bottom of the range. We want it to be optimal. And so those are some of the supplements that I think about. Another couple of things I can say is, in order to flush the hormones out of your body, so your body makes hormones every day, and then at the end of the day, we're going to flush them out of your system. And it's your liver that primarily does that, but your liver dumps the hormones in your gut and you got to poop them out. And so if you're constipated, they just get reabsorbed and you can have more symptoms. So we don't want you to be constipated. And magnesium is a really great supplement to make sure that you're moving your bowels regularly. And as I'm talking about estrogen, I realized we didn't even talk about estrogen, but when you don't, when you go, when you're going through menopause around the age of 50 and menopause is dropping, then your sleep really goes to hell in a handbasket. So, you know, definitely estrogen is super important for stress. But when you're perimenopausal, sometimes the problem is you still have your estrogen, not enough progesterone. Flushing the extra estrogen away by having regular bowel movements can help to balance these things out. Fiber, of course, is another one. So another thing that is available is progesterone. And so if you are of a certain age, you know, you've done all the things, you're managing your stress, you're eating healthy, and your progesterone is still not where it needs to be, we can give you progesterone because at some point your ovaries are going to go down. They're not going to make it anymore. They're not coming back. And we can give it. So here in the States, progesterone is actually available over the counter. You can get a topical cream at the health food store. We prescribe it from a pharmacy, but it's available either way. And usually if you're sort of trying to do this for yourself, really typically what we would have you do is just that week before your period, when you're not doing so well, we would have you apply the progesterone cream at bedtime in order to help you to sleep better because of its calming effects. I like giving progesterone in a capsule from the pharmacy for sleep better than the cream, because when you swallow the progesterone, it gets to your brain more, it's more calming and you sleep better, but that you have to have a prescription. So you'd have to find a practitioner who could help you with that.
What about, so that would be hormone replacement, right?
That would be hormone replacement, yes.
And what about the other fun ones? Like, would we even in a perimenopause to consider replacing estrogen, replacing testosterone? Okay. Is that something, or would we just go with progesterone?
So always we want to do all the other things, right? So whether you're going to replace any of these hormones or not, yes. It's not just about getting a prescription for a pill. We want to make sure, you know, manage stress and poop regularly and, you know, all the other stuff. We want to do that too. But yes, if your cortisol is out of whack, usually we don't replace cortisol. Usually we use lifestyle changes, supplements, herbs, things like that to help balance the cortisol. But if estrogen, progesterone, or testosterone are down because your ovaries are, you know, going downhill, the older you are, the less likely it is they're going to come back. So if you're 35, we may be able to do all these different things and your ovaries may resuscitate themselves and then you don't need testosterone or, you know, estrogen or whatever. But as you're getting closer and closer to menopause, especially if you're over 50, they're probably not coming back. And yes, we certainly can replace. Women are very scared sometimes of hormones because they're afraid it's going to cause breast cancer. And this is something that's been so frustrating because it is a myth. Estrogen is what everybody thinks. Everybody knows that estrogen causes breast cancer. And in fact, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. The studies do not show that estrogen replacement causes breast cancer. You know, when you're 30, you've got way more estrogen when you're 60, but you're way more likely to get breast cancer when you're 60 than when you're 30. Estrogen doesn't cause breast cancer. Estrogen replacement therapy doesn't cause breast cancer. What we did find is for women who got a combo pill that was estrogen with that synthetic progestin, the drug kind of progesterone, not real progesterone, there was a teeny tiny increase in the risk for breast cancer, which scared everybody. And they just labeled it all with one brush, right? They just said hormones cause breast cancer. But for women who got a pill with just estrogen, because they had a hysterectomy, so they didn't have a uterus, so they didn't get the progestin, they did not have an increase in breast cancer. In fact, they had a slight decrease in breast cancer. So why is that not what we're told? We're all told estrogen causes breast cancer, except that it doesn't. And so doctors learned in the 2002 about the study and the breast cancer. And we were so horrified. It was seared in our psyche. Oh my goodness, be scared of hormones. And so doctors continue to perpetuate that myth. And there have been studies published to retract the original studies saying, no, it's not the estrogen, you know, the natural form of progesterone that we're talking about. Like if you go to the, you know, pharmacy and get the topical cream, progesterone is breast protective. It doesn't increase the risk for breast cancer. It's just that progestin drug. And it was a specific kind of progestin drug. But a whole generation of women have been scared off hormones unnecessarily. So going back to the woman who's perimenopausal, if you're still having periods, especially if your periods are heavier than they used to be, that means you don't need estrogen yet. Estrogen is what causes your uterine lining to thicken so you have a period. But if you're hardly ever having your periods, are really spread apart, if they're super light and scanty, those are signs that your estrogen level is dropping. And in that case, sometimes adding some estrogen can make a world of difference. And you don't have to be, you can get breast cancer if you're on hormones or not hormones, but being on hormone replacement therapy with the natural form of the hormones, we call them bioidentical, meaning it's an exact match for what's in your body, have not been shown to increase your risk for breast cancer. And one more thing I'm going to say, I know I'm talking a lot. My last thing I want to say is, even in that study with the pill that had the very tiny increase in the risk for breast cancer, even in that study, you were less likely to die if you were on that hormone pill that I'm saying isn't a good one than if you were not on any hormone replacement. There was less colon cancer. There was less lung cancer. There was less hip fractures. You were more likely to live a longer life on that kind of hormone therapy that's not the good one than on none. But that's not what we told women. We told women hormones are bad, scary, and dangerous. And we did a huge disservice to an entire generation of women.
Yes. Thank you for making that point. And I think I just want to reiterate what you just said. You said women who replace hormones have less risk of certain cancers than women who are not on any type of hormone replacement, menopausal time, postmenopausal time.
Doesn't that make you blow your mind?
Yes, it does make you blow your mind. And go ahead.
I'm just saying, why aren't doctors telling women that?
Yes. And if you are interested, just for the listeners, there is a fantastic book. I read it like last year. It's called Estrogen Matters. If that is really something you're concerned about, because there might be breast cancer in your family, or you are just really scared of potentially having breast cancer, read that book. It really explains a lot. It's very eye-opening. If they go through the studies and they unravel what's been happening, and they discuss exactly what you were saying, that women who had hysterectomies, who get estrogen.
Yeah. It is written by an oncologist who specializes in breast cancer. Yeah. Like, it wasn't written by a holistic doctor, or, you know, it was written by a full-on mainstream medical oncologist. He's the expert.
But to actually just, before we wrap up, to switch that around, because a lot of us are so scared of breast cancer. And I know this is going away from the sleep discussion, but while I have you here, and if we look at mortality in women, breast cancer might be scary, but breast cancer isn't the number, like, this is not our main, I don't want to say our main concern, because yes, chemo and everything and all that is not great, but that from a mortality perspective, that's not our biggest concern in women, right? Is it?
Most women who have breast cancer die of heart disease. And hormones help to protect you from heart disease.
Yes. And all the things you talked about, what we need to have in place to hormone replacement actually work well. Eating a diet that's good, moving, managing your stress, all these things also are anti-cardiovascular disease.
Yes. And we always want to put the hormones in a healthy body, because we want the benefits of the hormones. We don't want the risks and the side effects. And it's not so much the hormones, it's what does your body do? And so if your body is inflamed and toxic, et cetera, then you're more likely to have a problem. So the healthier you can be, the better you're going to feel, the better your results are going to be. So it makes a really big difference.
Yeah. So it's really about starting to set yourself up. Like, if you're struggling with sleep, with brain fog, with all these things, start making small changes in your life to get to just a better place, that by eating better, you'll feel better, you'll move more, you'll have more sleep pressure just from that. All these things will help. And then we can have a discussion with our primary caregivers, ideally, about, hey, these are still the symptoms that I have. I'm seeing a pattern here. This is happening every 3-4 weeks, wherever your periods are. right now? And then can we have a discussion about how we can mitigate that? Yeah. Great. This was so helpful. Thank you so much. Where can women find you? Where can they follow you? Where can they learn more about you?
Okay. My medical practice is in Charlotte, North Carolina. And on our website, we have all kinds of information. And the website is signaturewellness.org. I wrote a book to help women answer the question, like, is it my hormones? And so the book is called This Is Not Normal, A Busy Woman's Guide to Symptoms of Hormone Imbalance. And it has a lot of quizzes, like quizzes for symptoms of low testosterone or high cortisol or whatever. So you can kind of go through and figure out for yourself if, you know, what seems maybe like the problem for you. And then there's tips for what can you do to make it better. But there's also information about how to talk to your doctor, like what tests to ask for to help you, and also to help you figure out if your doctor's maybe not going to be the right one to help you. And there are resources for where you can find a doctor near you who would be more likely to help you with your hormones. So you can get a free copy of the book at isityourhormones.com. You can download a free ebook, or if you like the physical copy, it's available on Amazon. And on social media, I am at Dr. Deb Matthew.
Awesome. And I will drop all the links as usual in the show notes and the descriptions. Thank you so much for being here. It's been an absolute pleasure. I think there are so many golden nuggets for women to take out of this conversation and start feeling better, sleeping better, and just getting that energy back. Thank you so much. And thank you everyone for listening and watching, and we will be back soon. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sleep Like a Boss podcast with me, Anika Carroll. Be sure to follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts. We also invite you to play the game of sleep with us, if you haven't done so, at sleeplikeaboss.com. This podcast is for informational purposes only. We hope you enjoyed the episode. And until next time, and to a good night's sleep.